Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. Gentlemen, and welcome to the Backyard. This is Margaret Marshall, your host, and I'd like to welcome you this evening. And I want to remind you that you're listening to Blog Talk Radio, as the ad said before, but I want to tell you that the little reggae classic that we listen to every week is by Mr. Kevin MacLeod. I don't know a lot about his work, but I know that always just gets me into a chilling mood. And as we say on the island, no problem, Mon. It's time to just relax and take our virtual trip back to our favorite place when we were on the island. So if that was in your backyard, on top of the roof, on the beach, under the tree, or on the veranda, I invite you to go with me as I just look forward to this hour or so that we spend together, where I can just relax, forget about the worries of the week or the day, and just remember those times when I was young, I had no cares, and I didn't even know how good it was. But I remember the breeze across my face as I sucked on my mango or just chilled with my friends. So I invite you to go to that place with me this evening, because when we are here in the backyard, we're not here to discuss politics, who's right, who's wrong, or religion. We are here to go back in the memories that we cherished when we were growing up. So with that said, you can wake up now or pay attention now, because I see that my very special guest, as most of my guests know, my fans know, we've been having a series called Education during the 40s and 50s and up to independence, the way it was, because like the rest of the world, things have changed and continue to do so. And here in the backyard, each week we get together to leave a living history of how things were when we during our period. So I appreciate everyone who has contributed to the information, and I am sure that, believe you me, your voice and your passion and your enthusiasm for Jamaica will continue long after we have left the planet. So with that said, I think I see our very special guest, Mrs. Phyllis Broom Walker, artist and, what should I say, storyteller. I just loved the story, that little story she wrote when I asked her to send me a promo about herself. And I see that she's on the board. I will open the mic to her and ask if I may read it. Welcome, Miss Phyllis. How are you? Are you there?
Hello.
I think I opened. Oh, 954 is not Miss Phyllis, but I saw a hand up. Who do I have?
Carl.
Oh, hi, Mr. Carl. How are you?
I am wonderful.
Oh,
I'm one of your loyal fans. I listen every week.
Oh, that's great. You warm my heart.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to ask if our guest for the evening is on the board. Would she please raise her hand? And I'm going to read in the meantime, even without her permission, what she sent me, because she's been a guest on the show before.
Okay.
She was here. She's a accomplished artist, a very interesting art way of, I mean, the art is very interesting because she's enamelist and does murals and actually has an award-winning one of her pieces that hangs in a museum in Canada. So if she's on the board, I'd like her to raise her hand, hitting one on her telephone, and that will tell me that she's ready to interact with us in the backyard. I don't see. Oh, yeah, here she is, a 416. So, good evening. Wait a minute. I'm having trouble with my mic here. Good evening, Miss Phyllis. Are you there?
I am very here listening to your charming voice, my dear.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, you know, I just look forward to this time in the evening, on a Wednesday evening, with my fans. Because, as you know, I am very passionate about leaving a history. And I just wanted to know if I may read what you sent me as I asked you for a promo. I thought, you know, it just tells how much of a storyteller you are. May I?
Certainly, Margaret.
Okay. So this is Miss Phyllis speaking. A little girl went off to school many years ago, full of excitement and joy. Finally, she would be let into the mysterious world of spelling and reading. No more spelling to keep her out of information. The lack of a television was the number one motivator to learning. Amen. Very soon, she didn't say the amen, I'm saying it. Very soon after, I left the little school and went to Campion High School, stern principal, Mr. Grant, luckily. I was an excellent student in school because I was also very high-spirited and full of beans. But many of my transgressions were forgiven because of my many A's. As early beginnings as an art student had continued through my life, and I didn't really understand math until I was 40 years old. I went to a workshop, and the presenter, she says his name, awakened me to the beauty of math. After prep school, I moved to Excelsior High School, and some memorial days, acted in many plays, recited at functions, learned to love classical music, under the tutelage of Mrs. Flinch, learned to dislike sports after I got hit with a hockey puck, and I have stayed away from sports throughout my life. I thought that was funny. A thorough basic education is the foundation on which I have been able to succeed as I made my way through university and life. I just wanted to share that, Miss Phyllis, with our listeners and the rest of the world, because I thought that was beautiful. You know, many of the people I've asked to be guests tells me that just going back to the days when they were going to school, you know, sort of brought back so many memories to them, and I can see where you had the same experience.
I certainly did, and it was really, really funny because there are things that I had long forgotten, but after you kindly asked me to be a guest, I started going back into that little girl with her pigtails and, you know, her ribbons, all the lovely things that happened to me as a little girl growing up. I guess my father spoiled me a lot, and in school I also had quite a bit of encouragement because I guess I've just always been a hard worker. Just always been a hard worker. And highly competitive, too, because I remember this girl, Barbara Strawn. I don't know where she is now, but we spent all our time seeing If I got 100 this week, for sure she was getting the 100 next week and I was getting 98. We had this competition going on through school with our language arts because those were my strengths, and I think to myself, they've remained pretty much the same, you know, that maybe when we are small, those are the things that people should encourage us with.
Yes.
Because we have a sort of leaning towards them.
Amen. But, you know, as we know from experience that when we're young, we can absorb a lot more, you know, at an early age than they, you know, than most people thought, especially in the American educational system. Because I know that I took my children back to Jamaica to start early school because I know that I had something to compare it with. So
yes.
Starting early is very, very important.
But it is
back
not that
you.
Other countries don't know this because very early in your teacher training, you're taught that, you know, the first 6 years are so important. So it is that there are people who don't believe in conspiracy theories. I am not one of them. I think that everybody knows that early childhood education works and improves the minds of people because I think about the mind like a bowl of flour. That's how I think about the mind, like a bowl of flour. And the yeast that you put into it, that's education.
Oh,
so you have a flower just sitting there, inert, and nothing happens to it until you add the yeast and the water and you knead it and you make it into a loaf of bread. So I believe it is a criminal act, really, that is well planned out because if you know this truth, and this has been this is an old truth, then why not broaden the information base and teach children when they're early? Because I kept on asking here in Canada when I just started teaching, well, what is going to happen to them if they can't read? And now I see what's happening to them. They're little thugs from all races, all groups. Because don't give them an education early, before they are nine, as I would tell every parent, never mind about the schools. Teach your child to read before they're nine. If they're hooked on reading before they're nine, then you don't have to worry about them because even if they misbehave for a little while, they can always go back to the joy of a book. But if they've never learned how to look in a book, then it's all lost because this business about technology. I've never seen one kid yet who can't just go to technology and just absorb it easily. So the thing is, the children of poverty, most of them don't have any money to be buying iPods and this and that. So teach them to read in the early grades. And by the time they're in grade three, they should be proficient readers. We're only dealing with 26 letters in the alphabet. And many a thing with my computer is a child of 8 or 9 who has taught me.
Interesting. Do you remember your early your early school, your little girl school, as you refer to it as?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
So tell us a little bit about it.
Well, the whole thing is this woman near our home, she had this little school. I call it a little school because it was just about 10 of us. But I had cried so much when my sister that I followed had gone off to regular school that my mother and father decided, and my mother used to say that my father spoiled me because I guess he couldn't take the crying. I wept so hard that I wasn't dressing and going to school. And he said, why not just let her go to this little school? And I was so thrilled. I had
so
my
how
place.
Old were you then?
I think mother says that I was reading at 3. That's what my mother said.
Oh,
that's what my mother
wow.
told me. So maybe I was off to that little school when I was five because I was always very good at language, everything. I was really bad at math. There's no getting away from that. But I was an early reader, and I was very good in something called Latin, which I don't know if anybody even bothered to study that dead language anymore. But as the basic for all English, it stood me in good stead. So when I was like at exercise 35 in Latin, most people were like 50 at exercise 15 because I really loved it. It was a very logical type of learning style. But the whole business of that little school helped me to feel that I was grown up, even though I was so little. My mother and father were very... my father was very strict about certain things. They were strict about different things. My mother was strict about you not wasting time. So all of us had to sit around that big old mahogany because, I mean, mahogany wasn't any luxurious thing in the island. You know, it grows there. So have people make furniture for them like you'd get your shoes made by a shoemaker. And we all had to sit around that big old table each night and study, the older ones helping the younger ones. And so that desire to learn was inculcated very early in my consciousness.
Now, may I ask, what part of the island did you grow up?
I am a true Kingstonian. I hate to say it. I was in a hut. I was in a restaurant one night, and in the washroom when I heard this blue-eyed girl saying to another one, oh, they all pretend they're from Kingston.
All right. Gone under the clock.
But I really was from Kingston. My father had a bakery in Kingston called Pioneer Bakery. He was deputy mayor of the city of Kingston. As soon as we got older, we started out in Jonestown with the bakery, and then he bought a property in Stony Hill. And so we all moved away to Stony Hill.
And what was your name before you got married?
I was Walker, and then I married Broom.
Oh,
my father was deputy mayor A.A. Walker.
What
Walker.
Year was it?
Oh, boy. Can't remember that. If I go out in the living room, his picture is there.
No, just in the period. What, 30s, 40s, 50s?
Ooh, I guess maybe 30s or 40s. I don't want to be... You mean
my
age?
Right there.
Years. Maybe I was around 25 or so, 30.
Okay.
Not sure.
Uh-huh.
But I have
a
photo of him there with all these details on it. But I grew up in a political family, so when people say, you know, like right now I'm very busy in Toronto because the elections take place on October the 6th.
Uh-huh.
And so it's just a natural thing for me to be going. Here you go to the office and telephone people. We have like the list, the voters list, and say to them, you know, you'll pump up your candidate and say, you know, remember to vote on October the 6th. Someone say, I'm not telling you. Someone says, so whoever it is, vote, you see?
Uh-huh.
So
all right.
Politics come naturally to me, although I wouldn't become a politician in Toronto. I've been asked, but the answer is no. My entire focus, and I'm happiest always helping children, teaching.
Wonderful.
That. My calling, really. My passion.
Right. You're a retired teacher. Can you tell our fans and those who might come by later just a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm now retired after teaching here in Canada for many years. And my love of small children and never having had any for myself, all of that left me free to invest far more time than a teacher who maybe had three children for herself.
Yes,
I have been pretty much against something that happened here, and it's a black-focused school, because I think that what is needed in Toronto was what I found when I started teaching, and that was a social worker which was attached to, say, five schools. She attended five schools, and troubled children that were in those schools, the social worker would come to the school, and there'd be in that room with her for the morning. Because when you're trying to teach in a classroom with one child who is constantly misbehaving, you're really robbing the other children from their learning time. That's so true. There are many things about teaching in Toronto that I would have grave reservations about. And I have said to people who want to bring their children here, don't bring your children. Keep your child in Jamaica. Or had a little boy who was very naughty. He was from Grenada, and I said to his father, take him home, because the place for most spirited black boys, particularly, there's just one place for them, and that's jail. It sounds...
that's funny.
It's the truth, because if...
So back to your little girl's school now. You considered that really set the foundation for you. Besides your parents,
I considered that plus loving parents. Because don't forget that a lot of troubled children, we have a little boy up here who has just committed suicide. He had muscular dystrophy, and a lot of kids were teasing him at school. And one boy pushed him down to steal his iPod, and his face was all smashed on the cement.
Wow.
So the court case was this week. But what he did was to commit suicide.
Oh, we had one of those here, too, not so long ago. Not similar circumstances, but, you know, it's one, I'm telling you, it's really sad.
The grandmother of the child who has died has a loving heart, because she said, the boy who did that, his father is in jail for murdering somebody, or he had killed somebody. His brother is in jail, so he is also a victim of no home care.
I got you.
Which is really big of her to say something like that. It's not that she's a pacifist or anything. She's just looking at the fact that this child has had no training about what it means to be an empathetic human being. So I would say most of my success has been from being loved, because my paternal grandmother just loved me with a pure, unconditional love. She'd tell me every day I'm the prettiest, sweetest, most wonderful girl in the whole wide world. I could have just been fighting from, you know, down one street, and I really used to fight. I mean, nobody could understand why am I fighting, but nobody understood that these children were just tormenting me. I was being bullied. And then my mother said, God will take care of me. So in my child's mind, I really thought God was going to send a lightning bolt and kill them all.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
Well, children think up the most extraordinary things.
Right. So you left the little girl's school and went where?
I went to Camperdown.
Okay. Now, Camperdown was in Kingston. Was that like an elementary school before high school, or is that a high school?
It had
different stages?
For high school, for me.
Okay.
So that my mother wanted to stop me from this constant fighting. So she felt Mrs. Grant was a very strict headmistress, so that they sent me off to be straightened out by Mrs. Grant.
So how old were you then? You remember?
I might have been 9 or 10. I was trying to figure that out today. And I think I must have been about 9 or 10.
Uh-huh. Now, how did you get to school in those days?
Well, my father had a car.
Oh, yes, I forgot.
So
he had a car, okay.
You know, and the odd times that we had to walk home, it wasn't very often because typical Phyllis, I would get into trouble. So that didn't happen very often because people, parents in the islands are going to retaliate because I was walking home one day for some reason, and this little girl was playing with some marbles, and I said to her if I could play with her, and she said no. So, of course, I promptly grabbed all our marbles and ran home. So then our parents came to my home. So, you know, of course, everybody got spanked then. And it's just wrong with spanking in my point of view. But, you know, it's people think it's better not to spank them now and have the police put them in jail at 18. So it's a different world. So I was not usually left alone. I can't think of any that has alone because.
So how many siblings did you have?
I'm one of 11.
Really?
Yes.
No wonder they had a big table.
That's it. So, and no wonder I was never alone.
Yes. You know, well, I find all of this so fascinating because I'm an only child. I don't have a sister or a brother. And I'm the eldest of all my cousins. So,
wow.
You know, I'm always intrigued with large families and with the stories about it. So back
to
you.
But when you're in a large family, you're never really alone. And it took me a long time to learn to be alone in Canada because I came here with my husband, but with life changes and by myself, after his death and no children at all, one day I sang to this woman from Guyana, you know, I'm just here in this house by myself. She says, but you grew up with a lot of brothers and sisters. You'll always be a people person in the sense that, you know, you look and say, well, your house is empty because you never had that experience growing up.
Right. What number were you in the 11?
I was right in the middle, middle. So I had both people to spoil me, like my eldest brother, Carl, who is deceased. He just, spoiled me completely. Not to say to be naughty, but I always knew that my brother was there for me.
Mm. Now, was Campdown a co-ed school?
Yes, it was. Yes,
oh,
it was.
Okay.
And a lot of... What? They think Woolmer's was the oldest school in Jamaica. And
we did a program on Woolmer's before. So what part of Kingston was Camperdown? And is it? Do you know if it's still existing?
I think it's still existing.
Okay, and what part of Kingston did you go to it?
Is there a place, Racecourse, I think there was.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that name.
Yes, so that... I think that's what, maybe some listener might remember exactly where it was and phone in and share that with us.
Right. Okay, and so give us a little bit about how your day would flow. My whole idea is that we're leaving all these stories because nobody's writing about us. As a matter of fact, I tried to get some information on some of the schools. And there's not much, you know, the popular ones have a lot of information, but the ones that I know the names, but I don't know a lot about it, there's very scant information, if any at all. So I think, you know, it's a shame when there is not some evidence, especially of institutions that have contributed or people who have contributed, you know, to the betterment of us as a nation and for individuals. So I am really passionate about sharing that kind of information. So can you tell us a little thing about your teachers at Camperdown and what your flow was like?
I think that most of our schools were modeled after the British system. So we had monitors with responsibilities. We had a variety of... opportunities to grow in whatever area you want to grow in. By that I mean, for example, drama. I was very good at that, so I remember being in one play, The Taming of the Shrew, 1 year, and it was strictly modeled after the British system. What we had all our teachers were highly qualified people. Today, I don't know if it's the same thing in the school system. And we had a lot of teachers from Great Britain also. Then we said Great Britain. I remember Mr. Murdoch and Mrs. Aitchison. And we used to laugh so much because there was one teacher, we had such a crush on him, and then we grew up and found out that he belonged to an alternate lifestyle. So all those months we spent yearning.
Oh, you mean the girls spent yearning.
No, girls were, you know, so enthralled with this man, but he wasn't interested in any girls. So what would happen, you would go to school, and we would have the, in those days, when I was very small, and you had these large classrooms, say, at Camperdown, when I hear people saying here they can't teach 20, they can't teach this, you have so much paperwork in schools here that it's a wonder the poor, exhausted teachers even can teach. Where in Jamaica, you didn't have all this burden of paperwork, writing up these endless, meaningless, I use the word meaningless stuff. So into school you'd go, you'd get like a one whole hour of math.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody had to learn times table. Here we don't bother with that. They say the calculator. And truly, if you know your times table, you just can do divisions and all these things almost automatically.
Right.
So you have these blocks of learning. Pardon?
I said it's good for the brain, too.
Sure.
Then it is. Uh-huh.
So we had the games, like hockey. We played field hockey in Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
And we had cricket.
Mm-hmm.
Football. And basketball, netball, ping pong, which is like table tennis.
Right.
Side. But the academic learning was back to the basics. The three R's, reading, writing, you know, arithmetic, as they say, as a little thing. And I don't think there was one teacher who wasn't qualified to be teaching when
and
I was
how big
growing.
Were the classrooms? I mean, you know, how many kids
classes
were in the classroom?
Some classes had 30. Some classes had 40.
Wow. And this
thing
is, as you said, boys and girls.
Yes. The whole
now,
thing
is
that...
Now, was it attached to any religion? Was it a religious school? I mean,
no,
a
it
Catholic.
Wasn't. It was not. Well,
okay.
Nobody talked about any religion to me. I don't remember anybody talking about religion. But the thing is, you could have large classes because all the children were behaving. And parents and teachers had power. You can't have those large classes now because, you know, children have power. They'll just say, I don't want to do that. And, you know, principals don't want parents to be calling saying somebody upset my child.
Right.
It's a different business. It's a different business. So,
And that's why I think that this program leaving some information about the way things was. I don't know how much things have changed in Jamaica, but I think that leaving some information for the generation when they're ready for it is important because instead of someone making up a story, we are the ones who lived the story. So, you know, we want to make sure that we register it. So, so I'm really very gracious to all our guests that have shared their school experience. And, of course, you know, I know that even though we might think that the young folks are not interested, and I remember I wasn't when I was a teenager, but as I became older, I really started to have a love for history. So we, you know, we're making or writing our own history books.
Yes, and
I'm grateful to you for that.
Well, thank you so much for asking me. And I think if when we got independence, because next year's the 50th, if we had made our total focus education in Jamaica, many of the things that are going on now would not be going on, because education really opens up your eyes to reality. It gives you options. It is a tool that you can use to do whatever you want to do. Where when you're locked off in this prison of not even being able to read a book,
mm-hmm.
it's not good for any country to have large numbers of the people not educated. And this is why I always, there's something we have here called PACE. I don't know if you know about it. And each person who wants to be a member of PACE, you give $1 for each day for early childhood education in Jamaica. So you're in effect adopting a school in Jamaica and helping that school. That money might go for computers or to repair something in the school or so, and also to buy books for the students. It's called PACE, P-A-C-E.
Yes. We have a few local organizations here. I live in the city of Atlanta, and there are two that I work with on the radio show sometime that each one of them are for the educational system in Jamaica, you know, the young, early childhood. One is working in Trenchtown and in the challenged neighborhood. That's Integrity Children's Fund. And another one, which is Benevolent Missions of Atlanta. They get computer equipment for the schools. So I know a lot of people in the diaspora is really realize the importance of education. And I encourage those who might not be participating in anything to, you know, get involved with whatever is in your community or the state that you live in. But if you just go online, there are several organizations that can use your help. So let me just take a minute, Miss Phyllis, to remind our listeners that you're listening to Backyard Labrish on Blog Talk Radio. We're here each Wednesday at 8 o'clock, where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And this evening, for the past couple of weeks, perhaps about 6 to 8 weeks, we've been doing a series called Education the Way It Was in the 40s and 50s. So this evening, we're welcoming our guest from Toronto, Mrs. Phyllis Broom Walker, to the backyard, and she's sharing with us her school days. So back to you, Miss Phyllis. Now bring us up. Are you finished with Camperdown?
I'm finished with Camperdown, and then I went on to Excelsior.
Okay. So let's tell us now about that transition and what happened there.
Well, we had in Jamaica the certificates, senior certificate. The yearly exams came down from Britain.
Mm-hmm.
These exams were sent from Britain, and children all over the island took them. And if they were successful, of course, their parents were very happy. I was always successful. And off I went to Excelsior. On, we had there a wonderful man, Mr. Powell. He was the headmaster. And as I said, I don't know if any of these churches were affiliated to, any of these schools were affiliated to churches. I know, for example, some schools that friends of mine went to, I knew, for example, they were tied up with the Methodist or, you know, various other, the Anglicans and so on. But I don't have any recollection of hearing of either of those two schools being affiliated to any church. If anybody knows of that, I would love to hear. And it's something I must write to some Excelsior people and ask them about, because I think you have a lot of them in the United States.
Yes. We had our guest last week, I think, was involved with, it might not be last week, but we have had, and may I ask if anyone is on the board is familiar with or is an Excelsior alumni or know about Excelsior being connected with, I think they were helped with by the Methodists, I think, or two different religions got together. But Mr. Powell is the one who definitely started. And do you know there's not a lot of information about his life and his passion? I tried to research that. We've had, I think, two different people on about from Excelsior, Excelsior graduates already. But from what I see on their website, they do have a very active association in Jamaica. And somebody talked about one in New York, and I'm sure they might have them all over. But I'd like to ask anyone on the board that would like to join the Labrish and join Miss Phyllis, just hit one on your telephone, and I'd be more than happy to open up the mic to you. So back to you, Miss Phyllis. Give us a little more information about what happened and your impressions of how it went during your period at Excelsior.
Well, I just wanted to share this with you, that somewhere in my house, amongst all the millions of books that I have a copy of Mr. Powell's life and the school.
Oh, really? That's
yes,
good.
Oh, it is here. I know I have it for sure, and it's not something that I would have given away. So whenever I find it, I will make some notes and inform you about whatever. No, I'm not saying next week or what.
I understand.
One day, because for all of us older ones, it's decluttering time. One day I'll come across it, and I'll remember, gee, Margaret was interested in that, and then I will pass it on. Excelsior was a much bigger school. I think it was on Mountain View. And as you said,
yes.
Not much. They haven't, somebody's going to have to look after doing something about writing about these schools. And I'm going to, you have given me an idea. I must contact some Excelsior people and say, well, can we do something? If there's a chapter here or something, if we can fill in these blanks.
Yes.
The school started out.
I mean, we know about his, you know, when the school started and all that, but not much about him as a person.
Yes.
So
that book has all that in it. So
yes.
It's finding it and maybe even being able to donate it to the school in Jamaica, since you say they have a vibrant chapter down there.
Yes, I've been to their website and see that they have several members, really.
Well, then maybe this is something that I'll have to work on.
Okay, good. Well, and perhaps you can write an article or something on it, and we can post it on Back at Labrish.
Okay,
fantastic.
And I just, while I'm talking to you, I stretched over and reached down this thing that I have from my father. And this is from the Daily Gleaner. And it's Kingston, Jamaica, Monday, March 13, 1978. Uh-huh. Deputy Mayor dies at 69. He was quite young.
Uh-huh.
And it says here, Baker and voluntary social worker, former deputy mayor of Kingston, died in the university hospital. He was in his 70th year, started there. And he became a counselor of the Kingston and St. Andrew Corporation in 1956 for a division in St. Andrew. Was deputy mayor for the 1956 to 1957 term. Served for several years as chairman of the Central St. Andrew Constituency Committee during the incumbency of the late N.N. Neversole as MP for Central St. Andrew. And then he was well-liked in the Central St. Andrew community, and many persons benefited from his philanthropy. In 1953, he built and donated a community center at 34 Penn Street for development of cultural life and general community work. An Anglican by religion, he was married to the former Esme Cushney. He survived by his wife and the several children, the 11 of us.
Oh, wow. So do you have siblings in Jamaica now?
No, I don't. All of us are out. Most of my, well, my nieces, I have two nieces in the United States and one in New York, one in Atlanta, and a brother in Florida.
Uh-huh.
But he also went to Excelsior.
Oh.
I guess my eldest brother went to Excelsior. He was head boy. As I said, the schools are modeled after the British system. So you had the head boy and the head girl and all the monitors that went with that.
Right.
So
what is your brother's name?
My eldest
brother. There might be fans who went to school with him.
He's Carlton Ludlow, L-U-D-L-O-W. I've never found out where that Ludlow came from.
Now, was he younger than you or older than you?
That was my eldest brother, the first in the family. The first in the family. And then Aubrey went to Excelsior, too. He went off to England. He has passed away, too, now. We're all getting older. And Trevor in Florida. So
how many siblings do you have living?
That's five of them. So that's half.
Yes. So what year did you graduate Excelsior?
I graduated from Excelsior. That was 1958.
The year before I left for the States. I left for the States in 1959.
And what took you there? Why did you go? What took you to the States?
Oh, higher learning. But let's talk about you.
I couldn't resist that one. Well,
yes. And, you know, as I mentioned to most of my fans, I've lived here in the state that I live now longer than I ever lived in Jamaica.
Really?
Oh, yes. I've been here since 1983.
Wow.
So in the state of Georgia. So I've been here, you know, but I'm still a Jamaican at heart.
Oh, yes. We never give up on our home and native.
Right. And I have just such fond memories, you know, of growing up there. So I am just encouraging my senior friends and fans to share their stories so that the next generation may get a glimpse into the life we had and how it was when we were growing up. Because, you know, the younger generation now have access to all of this cool technology that they are really using. I mean, every day there are new uploads on YouTube of what's happening all over the world, but we're just concentrating on Jamaica. But, you know, the kids are uploading instantly. They're blogging, they're doing articles, they're forming groups, blah, blah, blah. So a lot of information about the now Jamaica is online, and the whole world has access to it. But the maturing group of Jamaicans do not have, you know, much of a presence. So this show, Backyard Labrish, I had the passion of creating it and really dedicating it to us, leaving some history about the island we grew up in. You know, not what is better, what is worse, or just what was. And I really want to encourage my fans to let your voice be heard, leave your mark. You know, so join us in the Labrish. I was listening to a country song. I remember when I was growing up in Jamaica, country songs were on ZQI and Radio Jamaica. I don't know if you remember that, Miss Phyllis, but I remember we always had a lot of, you know, country songs. And I'm still a country fan. And I was listening to one of their new songs now, and it asked a question. You know, those songs always tell a story. And it said, how will the world know you're here after you have left? Are you leaving your mark? And I consider these stories that we leave, you know, in the clouds, as they call it now, is leaving a mark. Because we are leaving a history of ourselves, what we know, what went on when we lived there. So I think it's very important. And I want to thank all my guests and all my fans for being so supportive. And Miss Phyllis, I want to thank you for sharing with us. Would you like to tell us some more about the impressions of what the school meant to you and what you can remember of it?
I think the wonderful thing about growing up in Jamaica, it is that you had these extraordinary Jamaicans to be your mentor. Everywhere you looked, you saw black lawyers, black doctors, nurses. You didn't feel that you were a problem, as so often many of our children growing up in communities where they're very small here in the wider world can start having all kinds of complexes. We had standards. You went to church every day. You dressed a certain way. You did not have any outside images, as television can send. I don't know if you get BET there or if you have ever seen it. This kind of negative teaching to the young people. That's the beauty, I think. I think that's the number one thing that I would wish for the children here, that they could see the kinds of examples that we got as children. There was just no question about your becoming excellent, because that's what you saw all around you. And this is the greatest gift that the older Jamaicans had. Whether you want to be a monarchist or you think the British system wasn't good, it had a certain standard that was given out to everybody. And whether it was, because I came from a time when on a Sunday you're putting on a little white glove going to church in the afternoon. So there were all these things that people thought were important, what we would call pride in poverty. And regardless of whether people just had the smallest, you could see people with the children going with the uniforms all starched and iron, and the pride of going to school. When you can look at young people going to church, going to school today, and you have to wonder, are they really going to learn? Do they understand that this is a tool that can take them right through the world? So, and so with great successes, because for all the older Jamaicans, and that's all the Jamaicans who are over 50, I would say, who got that good foundation. We have a wonderful woman here, Avis Glaze, who has done so much in the educational field as a Jamaican, because she came out of Jamaica with her foundation well laid. And so I give real thanks that I was one of the lucky ones too. And that is something that if I could wave a magic wand, I would put Jamaica back to where education was the focus.
Yes, because I tell you, things have changed there now, because the young people all over the world, I suppose, have access to, you know, everything that happens, especially here in the United States and anywhere else in the world that they want to, you know, with the satellite and all of that. So in terms of mentors and models and role models, things have changed.
Yes.
So that's why I'm just happy that we can talk about a time. And I always like to remember, and I mentioned to some of my friends here, my foreign friends, that in Jamaica in those days, in my days, we were not given a different set of exams than were given the children in England.
No.
We had to sit for the same exams. No, you know, the grades weren't lowered for us. We had to make the grade or not make the grade. And I think that is an important part of even the colonialism that we had out there.
Yes.
I think that is a very important point to make.
And I agree with you wholeheartedly. I certainly do.
Yes,
we have no excuse whatsoever for not taking up the torch or running with it and seeing that the enemy is within ourselves if we don't see what is out there to ruin children. Because just
right.
Today at a political thing, this woman was saying to me, she had to send her daughter back upstairs 3 times to change to dress for school. I said, but you're sending her back, but the television set is telling her that how she looks is appropriate. So it's a different world altogether.
Yes,
and,
I know yeah. what you mean. So I think we've had, well, I feel I've had the best of both worlds, really, because I came here to the United States when things were a lot different during the Kennedy years, and really, really have a lot of wonderful memories, both of my island, Jamaica, and the early years when I came here. So, you know, but now I'm really just focusing on leaving a living legacy so that the next generation, when they are ready, can get a glimpse into how things were, you know,
yes.
in the 40s and 50s. And when I'm not doing education, I do historic documents that are verified and put together by some of our wonderful historians that are working out there, Dr. Joy Lumsden, Dr. Rebecca Tortello, and I have a encyclopedia of Jamaican heritage that was given to me that is I would recommend to Jamaican families or Jamaicans to purchase for their children. It makes a wonderful gift, and it has a lot of history about, you know, different things in our culture.
And you have
and, I wanted to know if you remember any of the outstanding teachers, because I think that, you know, those teachers might have families that may lack grandchildren or great-grandchildren that would love to know that they're, you know, somebody in their generation made an impression on someone. So can you remember any of the names?
Yes, I can say straight off, Mrs. Aitchison. Mrs. Aitchison, I think of Oprah and her teacher, Mrs. Duncan. Mrs. Aitchison gave me so much to help me to become a strong little person. And when I was being naughty, she would always take time, even after I was punished, to tell me that she expected better from me. I remember one day, it was a long, long poem, Sohrab and Rustum, and it was a story of a father who didn't know this was his son. He was fighting in the war, and he killed him. And he stabbed him with a sword, and then his son had a particular mark, and he knew it was his son. And I made a big neigh like a horse. She knew it was naughty Phyllis, so, you know, I was given a detention. That's another thing, too, detentions. We had detentions. And, you know, the boys got spanked with the bamboo pole.
The cane, yeah.
The cane, they'd have to lean over the desk and get thoroughly, you know, that came straight from the British anyway. So, you know, because in British schools they were spanked, and so it was brought to the islands also.
Right.
And Aitchison really loved me and encouraged me. And there's another one, I can't think of, Carter, but Mrs. Aitchison I think of most of all. I remember she gave me a beautiful set of miniature cups and saucers, you know, with the willow pattern. Isn't that something? I hadn't thought about it the longest while. Because, you know, that's, I don't know if you know that story about the girl, her father didn't want her, it's a Chinese story, didn't want her to marry the boy. And by some magic, you know, she killed herself. They both committed suicide and they were turned into these birds that stay on the willow tree. So I would get, and I loved my principal, both of them. Mrs. Grant from Camperdown, she was really a strong, strong woman. She ran that school. She was fair and a delight to be around. And Mr. Powell was a man of exemplary character. And grew from being small into quite a large thing. He had a vision for that school, and he certainly fulfilled his dream and his vision about making it one of the top schools in the island. So
right, and one of his passion or one of his ideas was that everybody should always be learning from 1 to 100. You should always be learning.
We certainly can say, although this is on Jamaica, that the Caribbean has produced some wonderful scholars.
Oh, yeah.
And I can say from my little country, Jamaica, that there have been people who have done so much in a little school like Camperdown, in the little teeny one that I spoke of before, and in Excelsior, to give to students the opportunity to really excel. And I thank my country for that. I really, really do.
Amen. Now, I'd like to ask anybody on the board that would like to interact with us, please hit 1 on your telephone, and I'll see a raised hand and open up the mic to you. So just let me know if you want to ask Ms. Phyllis a question or make a comment or you know, tell us a little bit about your experience, or if you can answer any of the questions that we still have unanswered. So feel free to join the lab. All right. Now, I know that there's a gentleman from Fort Lauderdale, I think, or in Florida at 954-583. His mic is already opened. So if you want to join us, feel free to do so if you want to speak with Miss Phyllis. Are you there? Carl? I think he might have taken a break, although his mic is still open. I wanted to make sure that he realized that his mic was still open. Yes, Ms. Phyllis, so what else would you like to share with us about your Jamaican educational experience?
I think that the women, I'm thinking now to women like Myrtle Robertson, who was head of the hockey team, that the opportunities and exposure that those women had in so many ways.
And yeah, I'm nervous. I am hoping that this is going to impress Ellie Reed.
Hello? Are you there, Miss Phyllis? Hello? I think we have a little technical difficulty. Are you there, Miss Phyllis?
I'm extremely nervous.
I think we lost our mic for a minute. Sorry about that. Are you there?
Hello.
I am here, but I'm also hearing somebody else talking.
Okay, well, I'm closing that mic. So you're the only mic that's open now.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
So I'm saying that a lot of women had a lot of power in Jamaica. For example, it's been an ongoing struggle up here for the girls to get to play hockey with different... When in Jamaica, we had a strong female hockey group. And I just thought about it today because I never thought about it before because, as I said, I'm not very much into sports. But as I was looking through my old book of photographs, I saw the female hockey team. Mm. So that means we were playing hockey like 40 years ago, the women.
Yes.
The women.
Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. I remember when I came up here in 59 and the women's lib was a big thing up here at the time. And I kept saying, well, these people are behind us. Because women have been strong in Jamaica from I was growing up. And I'm talking about 1959, you know what I mean? So I know we see where you're going. Because when we look back, but I just want to take a minute to encourage our listeners on the board and those listening online to take a moment and go back sometimes in a period and just recall the good things about your life then. You know, they talk about counting your blessings and really making note of positive things in your life. And we have so many positive things to be thankful for, the people in our age group. Not that everybody else have it too, but, you know, going back like we do when we're thinking about our school days really is important, and it's very good for our brain. So with that said, Miss Phyllis, I'd like to invite the people on the board to, if you would like to be a guest on the show, just let me know, because you'll be forced to go back to remember those days, and it would be everybody's experience is different, and everybody brings a different, you know, passion and energy to the table. So even though your school might have been discussed before, you know, you can add some flavor to it and tell us what was important to you then and what made an impression on you. You know, like Miss Phyllis has brought to the attention to our attention several things that was important to her at the time she was in school. So I really encourage you to participate in the Labrish and, you know, make it more interesting. So back to you, Miss Phyllis.
And you know, I was just thinking that maybe a lot of my love of nature. I remember when I was at Camperdown, we were taught how to catch butterflies.
Hmm.
See?
What did you catch them in?
Pardon?
What did you use?
Part of the science classes that we were taken out to various places, and we were taught how to make the nets out of old wire hangers and the net, and then we would catch the butterflies and mount them. And living close to nature and having science expeditions into various things, learning about these things right there in the island where we have so many different types of butterflies, I learned so much about the whole insect kingdom during my science hands-on activities that, you know, I guess much of these things have just remained with me all through my life because of that early exposure. We had this woman, Mrs. Fitchett, who came to us to Jamaica. She was our music teacher. So, of course, when I was growing up, we had no reggae, no Bob Marley, no... None of this kind of music that we listen to now. No gospel music. We sang German ladles, like, you know, who is Sylvia, what is she, that all our swains commend her. We had things like English songs, like there was a little Irish song that I used to love very much. Oh, in Dublin's fair city, where girls are so pretty, I first set my eyes on sweet Molly Malone, as she wheeled her wheelbarrow through streets wide and narrow, crying cockles and mussels, alive, alive, oh. Now I'm old, I learn these songs belong to different places, like, who is Sylvia? Oh, yeah, who is Sylvia? What is she? Let all our swains commend her. We had all these songs, a total flavoring of a different culture, but so important at the same time. And we would be taken to different competitions with other schools, and you would be expected to do very well, if not win, you know. It's, and I think about Fitchett lots of times, because I wake up always to classical music. That's what I listen to from the years of having Mrs. Fitchett dinning Chopin and so on into our brains.
Yes. Now, and where was she from?
I think she must have been a German, because that name, Fitchett, she came to Jamaica and lived there. I had a lot of foreign teachers, too.
Right.
Because Mr. Rendell was a math master. I see him now, tall, skinny Englishman, fell in love with one of the students, Grace Vassell, who is dead, or I wouldn't be telling the story. And we had about five English teachers in...
Now, did he marry the lady, the person he fell in love with?
The parents didn't want it.
Oh.
And, well, lots of times people don't want these things.
Right, right. Because I know that name, and I know that that person played hockey. What school was that you were talking
about? That was
Camperdown or Excelsior.
That was Excelsior for sure. Because
uniform
was beige, I think. Beige with a green tie, or different ties for the different houses, because the different houses had different ties.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know all the colors now, but I know for sure Myrtle Robertson, the picture that's etched into my mind, she's wearing her green tie, school tie, with the beige uniform. And you didn't even sit, because you didn't want those pleats to get mussed.
That's
right. That these uniforms, they were starched and ironed, and, you know, they were almost like alive as they walked around your body.
Yep. And actually, students knew that once they left school, until they got home and changed their uniform, they could be identified by what they were wearing, and they had to be on their best behavior.
Well, that was back then.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Because you would know is a Bulma's girl, or, you know, this, you would know them by their uniform.
While here, they're wearing a uniform and they're being just as naughty.
Yes.
I'm saying it's a different
different times we live in now. Different times.
Because there, it would be a disgrace to have somebody go home to tell your parents you did so and so on the bus. Here,
right.
They roll the uniform skirt up till it's just 1 inch below there altogether, and they're just carrying on.
Yes, my dear. Things have changed, so that's why it's important.
So this is why I don't get in the uniform discussion up here, because every now and again you hear people saying, oh, if they had uniforms, they'd behave. But those people who are saying those things, they're not even on the bus.
Yeah.
You know? They're in their BMWs or whatever. And and people throw out these notions that they are the solution to stuff, and it's not necessarily so.
Right.
Just as they all the talk about bullying has been going on for forever, but I constantly query if grown-ups are bullying other people on the TV, and doing things like roasts and so on, saying nasty things to people and calling it a joke, why do they think the young people aren't going to do the same thing?
That's true.
Because I watched a roast the other day for a man called Charlie Sheen, which I am sure you know about.
I
heard a woman saying some things to Mike Tyson under the guise of them being jokes that I really wouldn't like anybody telling me those things. I wouldn't.
Right.
You see? So I think that the uniform there, plus the order of the society, because the society had certain expectations, and your name meant something, because you were taught that you're not to bring disgrace on your family name.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's now. I really
don't. Yes. And, you know, I must say that there are still students that are really excelling all over the world, but, you know, we're talking about Jamaica. I constantly get information on really extraordinary things that's being done. So, you know, there's still a lot of Jamaicans that have excelled, continue to excel. And we really want to encourage all the parents and the grandparents not to give up on the kids, perhaps, because they don't seem interested at the moment. And especially when it comes to leaving a legacy or telling them, you know, encouraging them in certain areas, they might seem like they're not interested. But I think it's our responsibility, Miss Phyllis, to you know, encourage and support, you know.
Sure.
As seniors, we tend to be a little impatient because they don't seem to be listening.
Oh, I always have hope. And something happened up here recently where a man abducted this child. He had him for the whole week and turned him back in. Now, unharmed. No one has addressed this thing that here is this man, a known criminal who took this child away, and during that week he had the child. The goodness that he had been brought up with must have wrestled with the evil, and he finally won over and took that child back, 6 years old, totally unharmed, unscathed by the little child. Was just, every day I got up and I thought, see, you can never wash your hands on any child, because this is why I go volunteering with children, reading with them, going to homework clubs. Like up here, our library system has a wonderful homework system. There are all the ways that you can say, pick yourself up and just give a child an opportunity. Just once a week, helping that child to understand that, you know, C-A-R is pronounced car. And it's not just this emptiness that they can't see anything. Befriend them so that they can see that if they just master these 26 little letters that make up the alphabet, what a whole series of doors they'll be opening for themselves. And if they have nobody reading for them, I mean, I saw a great big girl, 8, outside a shop, like her mother was talking to somebody, and because her mother was involved with a friend, she started sucking her thumb. So I whispered to her, I said, aren't you a bit big to be sucking your thumb? She took out the thumb to tell me no.
Okay. I know what you mean. All right. Yep. So do you have any parting words we're running out of time. So I want to give you the next couple of minutes, and also the people on the board, if you would like to interact and make a comment or put in your 2 cents, let us know by hitting 1 on your telephone, and I'll be more than happy to welcome you to the Labrish.
I would love to hear from somebody.
Okay, well, let's. I'm asking someone on the board to raise their hand. I have 646-479-973-373. Would you like to? If you'd like to join the Labyrinth, just hit 1 on your telephone, and let us welcome you to the backyard. We're here each Wednesday at 8 o'clock, where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And for the past couple of weeks, we have been speaking with seniors about their school experience in the 40s and 50s. So we'd love to hear your story. So please let us know. And I, you know, this is a Labyrinth. I'd love for you to interact with me and let me know what you would like us to discuss. Because we just like to gather and, you know, reminisce about the good old days that we grew up in Jamaica. And since nobody's writing about us, we can talk about ourselves and the period that we remember.
Sure.
So, Miss Phyllis, I want to thank you so much for sharing with us this evening. And you can have a couple more minutes to wrap it up.
I would like to say that we are truly, truly blessed in having had the opportunity to grow up in that island, which somebody told me once that there are large electromagnetic waves in Jamaica, which has given us an added plus in our development as human beings. I know nothing about these matters. This scientist told me that. I can quite believe it, however, because when I look out at all that Jamaicans have achieved in the world. And next year, as we celebrate our 50th anniversary, we can say it's largely based, all our successes are largely based on the wonderful foundation that was given to us in those schools where people really thought about teaching the young as a sacred trust. And every single teacher who interacted with me informed me as to how I would be when I became a teacher. And once I became a teacher, based on the excellent teaching that I had received, I went out into the world to give back to small children the same love, caring, and high, high expectations that my teachers had for me in Jamaica. And wherever they are, wherever their families might be, they might have long passed, but their spirits will remain with their children. I bless them all. I bless them all.
Ah, that was beautiful. Very beautiful. And I thank you for being my guest. And I hope you will spread the word. I hope you will remain a loyal fan and spread the word and invite some of your friends to come share with us. And
always
that goes
market
for all the callers on the board, too.
You're doing a wonderful thing leaving this living legacy behind. Many people would not have had this idea and continued with it, and I send my blessings also to you for this wonderful job that you're doing.
Well, thank you so much, and it's because of people like you and all my past guests and the people who call in every week that, you know, has made it such a wonderful, rewarding thing for me. So I love and appreciate you, and like I say to all the guests that call in now, who may come by, those listening online and who may come by later to listen to the show, that we're here to celebrate and leave a legacy. So please join us next week when we'll be lavishing about something else, perhaps education still, if I have a volunteer to talk about the way it was. If not, I usually come up with something. So stay
I know
tuned.
You will.
And I thank you so much. Thanks, Ms. Phyllis.
My pleasure, and thank you for having me.
All righty. So you make it a great week. Good night.
Same to you. And thank you.
Thank
Bye.
You. Bye-bye.